This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today is architect Gary Olson, and we're going to be talking about responses to disasters worldwide and a particularly creative new thing that's come about. Gary, tell us, when are these shelter boxes that you're going to describe for us, when are they needed?
Well, actually, they're needed immediately whenever there's a disaster anywhere in the world, whether it's a civil war situation, you have refugees without homes, without shelters, whether it's the recent tsunami that's still needing many millions of more people to be sheltered in that region of the world. We've sent them for minor earthquakes, major earthquakes. It really, unfortunately, there's enough disasters in the world that we need to be able to respond immediately when those situations occur.
And what is in this container that's sent by people who care about folks who are refugees, suddenly without shelter, without home? What's in them?
Well, first of all, the name shelter box means that the shelter and the other items that are necessary for shelter of adults and children, it all fits in a large PVC, which basically is a heavy-duty plastic. That's really the container. So the shelter box, the shelter is in the box. And what you have inside the box is a large tent that's large enough to have 10 adults, or if it's a younger generation, probably 5 adults and 10 kids. It's divided into 3 sections. The outside sections are lower, and that's where you might divide it by the males on one side and the females on the other. And then the center section is larger, so it's standing. It's where people spend part of the day.
So it's not necessarily just for one family, because this is an emergency, and everybody who's there is quite willing to come together in one of these things to have shelter.
Well, the alternative is digging a hole and maybe covering yourself with a blanket or whatever you find. So this for the needs, it's for. You know, families are still searching for other family members. Mm-hmm. It's too early. So it's sheltering people and giving a little bit of pride and dignity back, because they've just lost probably everything they had.
So there's a tent, and what else?
The tent is the main thing. Let's talk briefly about the tent. The tent that we had at the beginning is being changed, because at first we felt the shelter boxes could only withstand the ultraviolet rays of the sun for about 6 months. In the 3 years of use of the tent, we are now coming up with a second layer of fabric, which gives us an airspace in between the two layers, which will make us cooler in the summertime, warmer in the wintertime. We're covering the outer layer with a residue, a chemical that really blocks the ultraviolet light. So these shelter boxes are approaching 2 years. We really haven't got them in the field that long, but they're designed to last much longer than 6 months, certainly between probably 14 months and 24 months.
Now, I mentioned that you are an architect, but when you say us, those who are doing this, you're a volunteer in this.
I am a volunteer, and everybody involved with me. Again, I'll talk about the history of this a little bit later on, but this all started in the United Kingdom. And everybody involved, most everybody involved are Rotarians. They're all volunteers. Many of them are retired. Many of them are not.
Now, Rotary is a service club that started in England and is now all around the world. But it began in this invention of these shelter boxes to meet this kind of a need started in a particular club in England.
Right.
That you visited recently. We'll get to that in a minute. But,
okay.
But let's finish
let's talk
up
about
with what's in
the
these. Yeah.
All right. Besides the tent, you have 10 sleeping bags. You have water purification tablets that would be sufficient for 10 adults to last at least 6 months. You have cooking utensils. You have a a cooking stove that's designed to be able to be used with low-grade fuel, because in the disaster area you wouldn't have all the things that you would buy at your local hardware store. So diesel, for instance, will be able to be used for cooking. And it's been all of these different products are coming from various parts of Europe right now. When the local club, which we'll talk about that club, the Helston Lizard Club in Cornwall in England, saw how expensive it was, a member of the club re-engineered it to make it less costly and more efficient. I mean, that's how things are done. Also, we have tools, carpentry tools, saws, hammers, crowbars, things that you would need to probably find trees and other residue that could be used for fires in case you need to have a fire. All those things fit into a large canvas bag, which once it's empty of its tent, the bag itself can be used for other things. And, of course, the box itself is a great storage container for whatever the needs might be at the time.
So how big is this box?
The box is almost, I'd say, just about five foot cube, about 5x5 by about 5 feet high. It's green, and everywhere that these shelter boxes go, there's a it tells where it's from. There's a big flag of the UK, or if Americans have provided these shelter boxes, they're big old American flag right on it. So wherever it's going in the world, you'll see the country that sponsored that shelter box.
So the contents of this shelter box that's sent to someone who's a refugee from war or suffering from a disaster, from a loss of home, it's to help them stay alive.
Frankly, without shelter, most people, especially if it's our if it's a very difficult, a very cold environment or even too hot, and with all the other problems with disease that can be spread when disasters hit and systems don't work properly, people will die without shelter.
And how do these shelter boxes containing these life-sustaining, this equipment, how does it get to where it's needed?
Well, that's a very good question. The first several thousands of these, and I'm going to talk about the history in a few minutes, were sent out, and various different airlines, Virgin Airlines out of Great Britain, and other large transport companies have offered to take them, and so far they've taken them at no cost to Rotary or no additional cost for the shelter boxes. So thus far, the freighting of them has been kind of gratis as another gift to those countries that really need our help. The problem has been that if you read deeply about what's happening even in, let's say, Sri Lanka right now, many of the world's gifts to help people survive the aftermath of the tsunamis. And, of course, there's been aftershocks that we don't hear about too much here. Three major aftershocks that have been, if they had happened in the United States, they would have made all the front page of how bad it was. But people are still homeless. Our shelter boxes are a dent in the overall need. But the problem is many of these clothing and food are still on the at the harbors where they're landing, and bureaucracy has not allowed them to get through. We have devised, when I say we, it's the royal we, about how do we get our shelter boxes to where they need to be. So we have a team of four people, so far not Rotarians, people that are young and volunteers. They spend 2 weeks in. It's called the 4R team, and the 4R team is Rotary, Reconnaissance, Report, and I've lost the fourth R all of a sudden. But basically, they go there and they cut through red tape. They are given the necessary tools, sometimes the cash that they need to get through, and they have gotten all our shelter boxes through to the sites where the people really need them.
Hmm. And who pays for those people to be involved in that process overseas? That's expensive.
They spend about 2 weeks. They're volunteers.
Huh.
They receive expense money and no payment. Hmm. Oftentimes, the organization they're members of, many of them are fire service employees. Many of them are with police jurisdictions throughout the UK. They want to do this, and some of them are paid for the time off by their local towns that they represent.
Hmm. We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Gary Olson, who is an architect and who has gotten involved through a service club that he's a member of and a former president, I remember, Sunrise Rotary Club, in letting people know about shelter boxes, which are a way to respond to homeless people around the world when there's been a disaster or a war or a natural disaster. If you have a question for Gary, or if you have a comment on this program or something like that that you've been involved with, please do join the conversation. Anywhere the program is heard, you may punch in 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call, and that's a toll-free line to here in the studio in Champaign-Urbana. So even if you're listening on the Internet, if you're listening live, you may call us 1-800-222-WILL. The call letters of the station, of course. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several lines you can access by punching in your phone 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL. We do welcome comments and questions. Gary, you said you'd tell us a little bit about the history of this program. How did it get started? It's not very old.
Actually, it's very new. It's still in its, I would say, the embryonic stages of its future life. It all started in a small Rotary Club that's a combination of two small villages in Cornwall, which is southwestern United Kingdom in Britain. And you take the railhead all the way to Penzance, and then you drive about 40 minutes and you arrive at either Helston, and then if you want to go a little bit further, Lizard is on Lizard Point, about 20 minutes further.
I love those English names.
Tom Henderson, a member of the club and a former naval commander, now retired. Many of the Rotary clubs throughout the world had special projects during the millennium. And his idea for a project was not a short-term project. His idea was to provide shelter for those people who, for no fault of their own, were in a disaster, a natural disaster, or because of civil war or other types of unrest, they lost their homes and maybe their possessions and everything that you really need to continue a family and a life that is keeps the family somewhat together. And his idea was an idea that was in the planning stages because it was fully endorsed by the Helston Lizard Club, and they really devoted 6 months in just making the plan. And the plan was to use their small community as a center where all the different parts that make up a shelter box would come to, and they would fill. At that time, they didn't even know what they were going to fill, but they finally found the perfect sized box that was inert and would not rust or break and could be closed up effectively. So for heavy-duty transport, not only by the airplanes, but once it got to the land, there's any different way. I've seen it on top of small motorcycles. I've seen it being two rowboats and a little plank between them holding 3 to 5 shelter boxes. It's remarkable how these have been transported in country. And his idea has grown and has been endorsed. The first 3 years, starting in 2001, they thought they were doing fantastic because they sent close to 3,000 of these all over the world, Africa, Iraq, up in the north area, not because of the war, but because of earthquakes that happened up in that north area. And there's no limit to where it would go, I mean, to the Caribbean. And, of course, it was in the world of disasters, it was a trickle of good things. We weren't known very well, and of course, everyone knows one of the world's major disasters, certainly in my lifetime, was the tsunami that hit with devastating force, great loss of life, and then we found that there were close to 500 million people in about seven different countries that had no shelter. And so from December 26th, 2004, until basically the middle of May, 17,000 shelter boxes have been sent in less than 6 months. Previously, the previous 3 years were a total of 3,000. So it's now become a major player in the sense of sending what's crucial for survival to all points of the world.
And in that time period you just mentioned where 17,000 of these were sent, each one is sheltering at least 10 and maybe 15. And, of course, since this is an emergency, maybe even more people from the elements. Tell me how you heard about this. How did you get involved as an architect in the middle of Illinois in a relatively small town where there hasn't been any disasters like this recently?
Well, my wife and I are fortunate to have a second home in Florida, and that's basically just north of Naples and Bonita Springs. And when I am down in our home periodically, I use the Estero Club, Rotary Club, as kind of my place where I go to attend Rotary. And at one of the meetings, the president announced that they had just received a certificate that told the club where their sponsored shelter box had been. These shelter boxes may only need to be on site for 2 or 3 months, and then they're transported to a different site. So it's like you've adopted it. Mm. Whatever club or individual organization adopts one, it then you're told as to where it goes next.
When you hear about this, when a group that has sponsored one of these, do you know how much help it has been? Is there any way to tell that?
You're given a number and you can track where your number has gone. And all I can tell you is if it leaves one point, that means that the disaster that occurred is now over and they've gone somewhere else.
I see.
Then the only... In early on, they've only lasted 6 months, but now it's going to be a little bit longer that we'll be able to track them.
We have a caller waiting on line one. Go right ahead. You're on the air with Gary Olson.
Hi. Thank you so much for the work you're doing. We all felt so helpless and hopeless and hapless when this happened, tsunami. So I think the remarkable idea that you're suggesting about the boxes, the shelter box, is a great one, and the staff with volunteers is also amazing. And I just want to thank you so much. It seems to me a very creative way of coping with a major disaster, and the fact that it's all around the world happening. I want to thank you for that. And I don't have a particular question. This is mostly a comment, but I'm so grateful there is a creative thing that can be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Gary, we've not talked about how people who think this is a good idea can be supportive. How much does one of these boxes cost to actually assemble all the materials?
Each box is $900. And Right now, our district, our Rotary District 6490, is I'm the coordinator for a campaign to eventually send over 100, or hopefully at least 100, shelter boxes over this Rotary year. Send our money to shelter box, and then basically right now most of the boxes are going still to the Sonoma area, but they will go to wherever the need is the greatest. So if a disaster happens tomorrow morning, we'll be sending shelter boxes there. We have, when I say we, I'm talking about the collective we, the warehouse in Helston, UK, has a backlog, so we can send them out immediately. And the reason we need to continue fundraising at all times is so we have a backlog of 1,000 or two ready to go out anywhere we can, anywhere the need is the greatest.
Now, politics gets involved in it, in everything. Is how do the folks who make the final decision as to where these go keep from being influenced by political concerns?
Well, we're a family of Rotarians. I wanted to make sure people do know that Rotary was founded in Chicago, Illinois, in 1905, and we're celebrating our 100th anniversary, and the major convention for the celebration is in Chicago starting next week. The Shelterbox Project, just to reiterate, was the idea came up in 2000. It was founded by the Helston Lizard Club in the UK. However, there are now, it's now spread from the UK, and I'll say we've had established in the United States for about 3 years, USA Shelter Box. And that's located in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. It's the Lakewood Ranch Rotary Club that sponsors it in the US. And the US is they're trying to, again, spread this word of Shelter Box and the great idea that I think it is throughout the United States. And so various zones have different coordinators, and I've been asked to head up, which is about 12 states in the Midwest, the zone that represents our club and our district.
So there might be people in the United States who are contributing toward one of these shelter boxes that cost about $900, you say, that gets sent to a place where there's been a war started by the U.S. for the refugees there, like Iraq?
I don't know of any situation. The ones that were sent to Iraq had to do with a natural disaster.
Uh-huh.
Civil wars where the innocent civilians get in between two fighting factions, yes, we would send shelter boxes to those people who were caught in between. I would say that generally Rotarians are apolitical. Their politics doesn't dictate any decisions made. It really is the board that's made up of a series of experienced people. Many of them come from backgrounds that are rescue operations in the military. One of the key members I met runs a helicopter the largest helicopter rescue mission in all of UK. And so that experience helps them determine. It's not just one person. It's a committee, but I don't think there's any question that they're going to send it to where the need really is the greatest.
Mm-hmm. Let me give the phone numbers again. If people would like to make a comment or question for our guest, Gary Olson, today in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We'll get you on the air. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number. We have a caller I see on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello. I'm a retired U of I faculty person who had in my classes in English as a Second Language a young woman from Taiwan who was an architect when she came. She had a degree from Taiwan in architecture and went into civil engineering here. and returned to Taiwan in time for me to do a retirement trip to visit her there. Time of the 1999 earthquake, I was in her apartment with her and her husband, who was also a U of I fellow in architecture and engineering. And the reason I'm calling is that she got caught up into relief work immediately there. She's a very talented and bright and generous young woman, and Taiwan government did not respond to that very unexpected earthquake in that part of the island. And it was a very severe one, and I've had lots of stories over the last 6 years, and she comes back here every year, and I would be delighted if she could talk to you the next time she comes back, Mr. Olson. But anyway, I'm calling because what she spoke of there brings to mind, I mean, what you're saying is really exciting, because she said that they went to the local farmers. This earthquake outside Taichung City was in a very picturesque area, as it turned out, where they were building new, very desirable housing on the side of hills where they could see the sea and so forth. Anyway, she wasn't concerned. I mean, she was concerned, but she didn't try to do anything about Taichung City and the people who were in the city areas. But she went out into the country. She was very concerned about the country people, she and her husband both. And they became affiliated with their academic institution in Taichung City, which did a great deal of volunteer work. But it was all very ad hoc, and they went to the farmers who had orchards, and they said, may we dig up your orchards and put down cement bases for temporary housing. And now, you know, 5 years later, they really regret what they did, because they've ruined the orchards, and these plastic boxes sound ever so much more desirable. But Rotary sounds as if they've gotten onto something really wonderful, and I wonder, I know that another one of my grad students who's back here right now would very much like, I think, to come to the Sunrise Club before he departs in early July. They've been here this year. But he's not in this aspect of it. But if you're non-Rotary and you need this kind of new insight into what to do about disasters, I mean, she confronted it almost single-handed in a way, because the other people all were teaching, or they were grad students or whatever they were, and she just happened to be free. And she's been searching the world for better solutions than the one that she came up with.
This one here might well be that. I do thank you for your comment, and appreciate that.
Well, thank you very much for the good news and for spreading it.
All right. Well, okay. Thank you for calling. Yeah. Appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
We were talking with Gary Olson, who is an architect from Champaign-Urbana, who is a member of a service club called Rotary International. And as our caller just indicated, this is a very new way to respond to disasters where people are left homeless around the world. And let me give our phone numbers one more time for people who might want to call: 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455 if your call would be long distance. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. And let me take just a moment before we find out more about the ShelterBox program that responds to disasters around the world. Let me say just a word about who's coming up on our program here in the weeks ahead. On June 19, the Sunday from 5 to 6, Ann Varghese will be our guest, talking about Bread for the World. In this case, a response to world hunger. Today we're talking about a response to world homelessness. On June 26, we'll be talking about a situation here in the United States that's very much in the news, and that is the whole issue of Social Security. And Kevin Sandifer and Mark Leff will be my guests, and they'll be talking about saving Social Security in the United States. On July 3rd, we'll be talking with Lee Melhado, who is the executive director of the Jewish Federation here in Champaign-Urbana. And we'll be talking about Jewish burial traditions, and that should be very interesting on July 3rd. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. The Y is the oldest continuous student organization on campus. There were a couple fraternities that got started a year or so earlier than the 1873 beginning of the campus YMCA, but there was a certain time when they were kicked off campus for some problems, and the Y has not had that problem. So we can claim to be the oldest continuous student organization. And the Y is where I'm the executive director. Has many different programs, 13 programs for students as well as programs for faculty and staff like Friday Forum and Know Your University lecture series. And the Y provides opportunities for students to develop leadership skills by being involved in direct social action and community service. I'll say some more about the Y later on, but right now we have a caller waiting on our toll-free line, line 4. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Gary Olson. Go ahead, please. Yes, line.
Hello?
Yes, line 4.
Because I came in late, I didn't hear the description of the shelter box. Do you have a website that has a visual image of this?
Yes, it's www.shelterbox, that's shelterbox.org.
Okay. And secondly, have you had any time to think about an appropriate type structure that would work in the United States for homeless people? And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
As an architect, that's something that may have crossed your mind.
Well, let me answer that question with something that we're doing in Africa. The shelter boxes that went out for the first 4 years of shelter box were basically shelter boxes or tents that we found that were most appropriate, what we thought for what the needs were. Now the company that's providing the tents realizes that Rotary is about 50% of their business, and they are willing to work with us to develop and to make whatever we're doing better and more efficient. In Africa, the cultural stance on shelters is a round hut without separations. All of it is at the same height, and there's usually some kind of a dome top to it. We have already had a prototype built. We sent it back for some adjustments, but this fall, in disasters that may occur in primarily Central Africa, we'll be able to send shelters that are designed for the culture of the people that will be using them, and they'll feel more comfortable. It won't be home, but will serve their needs in something that they're used to, and therefore it's going to be better for them. One of the Mother Superiors that's worked with one of the Catholic charities that we associate with actually has said that when the current civil unrest is over, she would like to see the shelter boxes replace some of the native huts that basically have to be rebuilt every time there's a major rain, and she feels that these are going to be better for their daily lives, and we'll see if that really happens or not. But she's actually been sold on how well these survive and how good it is for people to live in them. Now, we don't want to replace native culture, certainly, but if this, for a period of time, is better than something that they have right now, until they can have something better for themselves, we certainly would be happy to provide them.
And for other listeners who've turned in after we began and described the contents of one of these shelter boxes, it does include a tent big enough for 10 to 15 folks, 10 sleeping bags, water purification system, a stove that works on low-grade fuel, cookware, tools, and did I forget anything?
I'm going to correct you. This includes water purification tablets.
Tablets, I'm sorry.
And I'll briefly talk about another idea that's available if you're
– Go right ahead.
One of the other major needs besides food, which is usually taken care of by many organizations and is somewhat indigenous to where you might be, people need clothing and people need water. And those are the first things that, if you're in a disaster, you might have the clothes that you have on your back. If you're in a flood, you might lose all those clothes. Water is going to be contaminated. If it wasn't already, it's certainly going to be contaminated after this. So there's another organization out of Britain that has something called the Aqua Box. It's somewhat smaller than the shelter box. It doesn't contain all the things that the shelter box contains. What it does contain is it's completely full of clothing for all ages, and it's hitting the young kids, really, Pampers and diapers and everything that babies need, the small sizes for the children and adult sizes as well. That's what's loaded in the box. At the very bottom of the box is what Steve mentioned, a water purification. It's like a large nozzle that goes on the end of a hose that comes from a well. If you're fortunate enough to have enough pressure to get it into some kind of a hose, and the hose is then attached to this, I'll call it a nozzle, what goes in is contaminated. What comes out is potable water that then you fill the aqua box with, and that becomes your wet reservoir for water. So again, with the shelter box first and the aqua box second, the aqua box is about $500 U.S. as opposed to the $900. Then you have, if you could send the shelter and then the water purification, and hopefully there's food somewhere, you really can have everything you need to exist right there very quickly.
To survive. We're talking with Gary Olson about the Shelter Box project that began in England and is now being supported by different groups around the different places in the world. And you mentioned that this began in Rotary Club. Some listeners may not know what Rotary is or may have an idea that Rotarians are just sort of small-town folks who get together and have fun. Tell us a little bit more about Rotary and its involvement in service.
Let me talk about Rotary in the sense that this project, Shelter Box, is a Rotary Club and Rotary individual-sponsored project. However, anybody can contribute to this. You don't have to have $900. If you have $9 and you send it to Shelter Box Central, this will be combined with other portions, and as soon as we have enough that can buy one, then that will you'll be part of a group of people that's providing it. So there's no limit to the amount. There's no minimum. It's just that I can tell you from firsthand experience, that the people involved are involved because they want to be. To them, this is – they work – some of them, when it's really busy, they work all day. But they know when they go to sleep at night, they'll sleep soundly because of what they've done.
Now you mentioned that shelterbox.org is where people can find out how to contribute.
Yeah.
Can you give us more information?
Actually, the local in Central Illinois, we have a Shelter Box Central at 115 West Church Street. Just send it to my attention, Shelter Box Central, 115 West Church Street, Champaign, Illinois, 61820.
And that's attention, Gary Olson.
Gary Olson. And then that where that goes, that money will then go to the USA Shelter Box. and they coordinate with the UK. Everything is sent out of the UK at this time.
But and the check would be made out just to Shelterbox?
The check will be made out to Shelterbox USA.
Okay.
But sent to the address I just gave you in Champaign.
115 West Church Street, Champaign, Illinois, 61821.
20.
Okay.
Let's talk briefly about Rotary. We're celebrating our 100th anniversary of the founding of Rotary, which was founded in Chicago in 1905, and actually February of 1905. So this whole year is the centennial year, and for many different reasons, but because it was founded in Chicago, our International Rotary Convention will be held in Chicago starting, I think it's the 17th, 18th of June, going for 5 days. At that location, there'll be several Shelterbox events, both the Shelterbox, the group, Tom Henderson, the man who basically his idea we've all expanded upon, will be there. Others that I've met will join us. I'll be working with both the Shelterbox group out of the UK and the Shelterbox group out of Lakewood Ranch in Florida. We're working to have regional offices that can help you, and also we're trying to get this project spread far and wide, and it's just really just beginning. It's now there's a it's been established in Canada, Australia, and Japan. And if I come back in 5 years, I hope I can mention about 60 countries.
Wow.
One of the things that we have to do is it doesn't seem real efficient to have, if there's a disaster in one of the islands, a volcanic disaster or something goes on in the Caribbean, for us to go to England to have them ship the boxes from England. It makes more sense to be able to handle it somewhere from the United States. And same thing if it happens in the Far East, Japan would be a great center for it. So if we can establish warehouses and each country can, I'll say, even compete to make whatever we have started even better, so the product that is sent out is more versatile and more longer lasting and more appropriate for human existence, we will continue to do that. And that's the goal of Rotary and all the volunteers involved.
Now, Gary, you just recently came back just 10 days ago from visiting where this idea began and where the central headquarters is for distributing the shelter boxes around the world when there's a disaster. And that's in these two very small towns in southwest England, Helston and Lizard. And what was it like when you actually visited the place? What did you see?
Well, first of all, I had a lot of people that told me, well, you know, you really don't need to visit. I mean, you can just check out the website and everything's going to be there. And, you know, why are you going through all the, you know, travel and expense and everything else? Well, as it turns out, websites are as good as they can be updated. And you can't really meet the people, shake the hands, see the operation in action, and look at what they're doing now and what their plans are for the future. I have people that I had contacted and talked to maybe by the phone a couple of times and email. Now they're all people that I have spent time with. We had a major Rotary meeting all in this particular club. There's a Inner Wheel Club, which it happens to be the women of Rotary have their own club, and the men are still in the Rotary Club, although in England they are trying to have women, which we've done in the United States in 1987, as members. They are just as active in Shelterbox, and I want to tell you that the people around that area are so proud of what's happening in Cornwall internationally that there are volunteers that come up to the warehouse and say, can we help you today? These are not Rotarians. These are just retired people that are off in the summertime because they're school teachers. We even have the local jail saying, well, we've got some great volunteers for you. They're very hardy, and they want to do something to kind of pay back. Hmm. And so it doesn't mean that this is a Rotarian. It's sponsored by the individual clubs of Rotarians, and it's endorsed by Rotary International, but it's not just a Rotary project. Certainly it goes to people who are not Rotarians. We're hoping to have Rotarians in that area that will help to make sure they go to the right place and help, frankly, to build them and put them in place. But Rotary has spread from 1905 when there were three people, and Paul Harris founded this in one of his offices, and it spread throughout the world. And there's, I think it's about 1.2 million Rotarians. I had a chance to host the team leader from Poland, who basically has told us that in Poland there's 120 clubs in Belarus, and Ukraine there's about 20 clubs combined. They're newer. Obviously, they're not part of the Soviet Union anymore, and so they're establishing clubs in China. They're provisional clubs right now, but eventually they'll become full-blown clubs. It's the best organization that I could be affiliated with because it's not political. There's service not only internationally, there's service, there's club service. We give a lot to our communities. We're helping to sponsor the Time Center for Men and the women.
The Time Center is a homeless shelter in Champaign. Mm-hmm.
And also Women in Transition, which is a homeless shelter for women in Urbana, mm-hmm. Just to name a few. So it's service to our own club, service to our communities, service to the international group. We're working in Africa on doing well for and actually creating a library for a school. So it's not just international or not just national. It's really community, national, international, and to our individual clubs.
Now, the last huge international project that Rotary International was involved with continues, and that's trying to fight polio worldwide, and that's been a major success in terms of its effect around the world.
That campaign is called Polio Plus, and it's been ongoing since the late 80s, and it continues to go on. We had hoped, Rotary International has hoped, that we'd be able to say that that has been wiped out. Unfortunately, there's always there's about seven countries that are, we consider them third world countries, that it all it takes is a drop of vaccine. And if you saw the recent issue of Time magazine, there are cases that are actually new cases. It's not wiped out yet, but it's getting down to the point where it's about 0.5% of what it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that in this decade we can say it's been wiped out throughout the whole world.
Gary, you told me earlier that you'd be willing to answer questions of people if they want to give you personally a call, since you're heading up this effort in Central Illinois. Would you give us your phone number?
Sure. It's area code 217, and the number is 359-3453.
And that's Gary Olson with a OLSEN, 217-359-3453. That's his office number. And again, if people would like to make contributions, they can make the check to Shelter Box USA and mail them to 115-115 West Church Street in Champaign, 61820. If you'd like to email Gary, he gave me his email address, which is Olsen, O-L-S-E-N, at advancenet.net for more information on shelter boxes worldwide. Gary, what's been the response in the U.S.? This started, was taken up by the Rotary Club down in Florida, and then they've tried to publicize this. How have they done that, and how have people responded?
I will say the first year we really started in the U.S. in about 2002, and it was a kind of a regional thing first. So Florida was heavily covered by, when I say heavily covered, it's usually one Rotarian being a guest speaker at a club, and the subject is shelter box. Steve, you will recall when you were asked to speak at your club, the Urbana Rotary Club, and you spoke about it, and we got some good responses from your club. It basically is word of mouth, and we do have DVDs that really show a very compelling story. And about we have two versions: one's 8 minutes, and one's about 13 minutes. 13 minutes has much of the information that shows the relief during the tsunami, and which is ongoing. And so it's really one Rotarian speaking to other Rotarians, and that's really what my job would be as the zone coordinator. I would simply facilitate getting the word to district assemblies where you might have 55 clubs represented, and trying to get members of those districts to have one or two people that will then take it down to the club level. And, you know, the response, let me just tell you, when I first mentioned this to my club, in 20 minutes, by the time I was done, people came forward, and within a week, we had three shelter boxes sponsored by, I'll say, one of the smaller clubs. We have about 40 members.
And that's at $900
each. $900
each.
Mm-hmm. We also sponsor a club from Champaign High School, which is an interact club for high school students. They thought the project was so compelling that as students, they provided fundraising for one shelter box themselves. Hmm. So out of a club and a sponsored interact club within our club, we've got four shelter boxes. If every club could come forth within our district and every district, we would certainly be able to backlog many warehouses in many countries, so we could respond immediately all over and quickly.
And what's been the response where people have received these? They've been themselves the victim of a disaster, war or hurricane or tsunami or whatever. And what reports have you heard of people's how these have worked?
Well, the first time I showed a DVD to my office, and my wife, who's been kind of my wife Michelle, has been my partner in all of this. There wasn't a dry eye in the house, because the DVD actually talks directly to those who have received them, and they are so happy. To them, this is a miracle. It's life-saving. It's so compelling when you see it that you really can't become emotionally involved in it. You feel like this is one. I'm not talking that about other charitable groups, but this is one that we know when it gets through, it is really life-saving to many people, and they realize that. There are many pictures you'll see in the DVD that where there's 20 shelter boxes in a large village with streets. I mean, it becomes the center of civilization for a disaster area where everything is in chaos. And all of a sudden, you see the beautiful, elegant, I think, designed tents with the flags of the countries that have sponsored them. And then, by the way, in the top of every, the first thing they open up is a certification that says who sponsored this shelter box for your people. Mm-hmm. It tells what club or what individuals or what organization. This could be sponsored by any church group, any service group, It doesn't have to be Rotary. You'll get the certificate. It will be sponsored by you.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a practicing architect trying to make a living. How can you spend so much time helping raise money for things, for shelter that's given away free?
Time management. I would say that my office, myself and my office staff, we probably spend 4 hours every day on this. A couple hours for me, my office managers, Tammy is well versed in what to do when people call. At the end of the day, everyone's there to see if anyone's paid us that day. Well, when I open a check and I see it's for ShelterBox, whether it makes any sense, it's the biggest smile I have of the day. Mm. And it's such a great feeling. It's time for, I really feel like this area has given me a lot, and I'd like to give it back, not just to, really, it's a way of me giving back what I feel people have given to me over the years. And when you're working with the people whose needs are so apparent and so predominant, so no matter what kind of day I had business-wise, it's always a good day when I'm dealing with people about ShelterBox.
We've been talking with Gary Olson today on Keeping the Faith about a ShelterBox program that provides a tent and sleeping bags and water purification tablets and stoves and cookware and tools that are sent all around the world. Each one costs about $900. It's an idea that originated in a service club in England and is now being sponsored by service clubs and other groups and individuals around the world. If you'd like more information, do go to shelterbox.org on the net or call Gary Olson at 217-359-3453. I want to thank him and those who have called in with questions and comments about this new program that began just a very few years ago. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs that's sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. Some of the programs that the Y has include things like Communiversity, where during our summer section we have some very interesting classes that people can take if you'd like information about them, everything from social dance, salsa, all kinds of dances, or different programs for exercise. Do give the Y a call, 337-1500. We have catalogs available, or you can check out our website at universityymca.org. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Ann Varghese from Bread for the World. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Being a kid has never been cooler. In fact, it's so cool, it's not just for the 12 and under set anymore. These days, more adults watch the Cartoon Network than CNN. Care Bears are making a comeback, and Scooby-Doo underpants come in grown-up sizes. Next time on the Peabody Award-winning program, To the Best of Our Knowledge, Born Again Kids. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Programming on WILL is funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, offering automotive repair on cars and trucks by ASE-certified technicians. In business since 1984, they perform computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake and suspension work, and other repairs. A shuttle service for customers is also available. The phone number for TK Service is 344-0800 or on the web at tkservicecenter.com.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, periods of rain and isolated thunderstorms during the evening, then partly cloudy with a chance of showers after midnight. The low in the upper 60s with northeast winds 10 to 15 miles per hour, shifting to the north after midnight. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high around 90 degrees with southwest winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with showers and thunderstorms likely. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.